Whether you want to escape the snow or plan it, Arias Medical has you covered. Try a rewarding travel assignment during the holiday season with Arias Medical Group. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AUREUS medical.com.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, the next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. We are lucking out here at CSM 2017. We've mentioned the numbers several times. More than 14,000 people here in San Antonio to celebrate the combined sections meeting here. And that's a record. Another record we're bringing up several times this week is 97,000 members of the APTA right now, looking to break that 100,000 mark and keep it there. So good signs for the profession. We got a nice mix here. We're breaking up the mixing board and getting more people involved. We've got some people on the show that we've had before and some people we haven't had before. So let's talk to who we've talked to before. Stefania Bell dropping by the party again.
This is always a party. Only last time when you and I talked, it was just a party of two in our own respective locations. Yeah. Not quite as exciting.
Yeah.
It's a little more fun.
And we're bringing some new people. Well, because I was standing in my room and you were in your apartment.
Yeah.
And we were doing it via Skype.
Mm-hmm.
But then I visited you in Philly.
Yes, you did. You came to the live show.
I did the live show.
The 06010 podcast.
And now we're doing our live show.
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome. Some new people. We got Haida Pluck. Haida, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
And Haida.
Poor Haida is losing her voice, but
yeah.
She's such a good sport.
Here I am. So, hopefully you can all hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you. You sound like you could work for a 1-900 service.
Maybe if things don't work out in physical therapy.
I like it. Every guy in the room is going to be like, yeah, who is this? And Jim, president of AMT. That's
yes.
Kind of a big deal. Dropping by the table. Thank you for coming.
I got dragged here out of happy hour and excited for the invitation to hang out with two of my favorite ladies.
You're actually looking at, among us, all three have been or currently serve on the board of AMT.
That's correct.
So I was a member at large several years ago. We won't say how many.
Well, let's talk about that because I've heard of AMT, but let's make sure everybody, I like to play the dumbest guy in the rule role. If I can understand it, it means anybody can understand it. So I've heard of AMT a million times, but what exactly is it? What does it do?
Well, AMP is an organization that formed in the early 90s to bring the current residency programs and fellowship programs together under one umbrella. At the time, the APTA wasn't interested in dealing with residency and fellowship programs, so this group formed outside the APTA to manage that. There were 8 fellowships at the time, and I think we're 28 now or hitting 30. But since that time, we've got the APTA on board of accrediting these programs and kind of come back working with them, and we've seen an explosion of residencies and fellowships from all practices, not just manual therapy, and we like to hold a lot of pride in that we were driving that force to move the profession forward.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's such an explosion to continue education even well after the DPT?
Well, everybody comes out with, you know, just enough skills to be dangerous in one area, and it's nice to pick your track and then have some real clinical mentorship with that, and anybody who has an opportunity to work with someone to be mentored really knows the value in that. So it was kind of a word of mouth growth initially, but now you see a lot of push even in PT school of talking to students about coming out and considering a residency track, and it's just growing and growing.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, kudos to you guys for kind of being pioneers there and then keeping it going, and now we see residencies and fellowships going up all over the place.
Well, it's interesting because it's a very intertwined tale. So Jim was one of the faculty when I went through the Ola Grimsby program. Haida was one of my students when I taught the Kaiser Hayward program, and then we've all worked together in the academy administratively. So I used to work on the board with the residency and fellowship credentialing and actually help merge the process with APTA. I was part of that. So like, in addition to the clinical training and the mentorship and all of that that's very strong, it's also the professional relationship building that happens. And
it becomes,
I think, that's
a family.
One of the most important things.
A very strong family.
Yeah, and I'll say this for Stefania. Before she became a big deal, she was already a big deal.
Starfania, I believe, is the nickname, right?
That's the joke on the podcast. But you'll never hear Rivard call me that. And I was not a big... Jim was the rock star. Haida's been a rock star in her own right because you've been serving on the board of the Academy for how long?
About 8 years, I guess. I started off as, well, nominating committee and then became member at large when you left. And then vice
passing
president.
It on. Passing the torch.
And then vice president for 2 terms.
Well, since you guys all have this thing in common, if someone's out there listening and they're thinking about, you know, becoming more dangerous in manual therapy, why should someone seek out something that AAMS can deliver?
I think a lot of people, when they think about manual therapy, they only think about, like, mobilization, manipulation. But if you think about what physical therapists do, a lot of them use manual therapy in many different ways. Neurophysical therapists use manual therapy. Pediatric physical therapists use manual therapy. All these people can benefit from being members of the Academy and share in the different techniques and the different approaches that we use to tackle a patient, whether it's orthopedics or neurology. As an orthopedic therapist, I use neurological techniques. Some of them are manual. Manual therapy encompasses a lot of things, so it's nice to belong to an organization where it's focusing on that and where we can share these ideas across different disciplines within physical therapy.
What is your take on it? What do you think, Jim?
The one interesting thing about manual therapy, when I started learning it, it was considered fringe and not appropriate to really go down that track. And,
really?
Yeah. And this was the 80s, you know, but things were different in the 80s. Hair was different.
Spandex.
Music was a little different.
A little different. Oh, music is horrible.
Thank goodness there was no social media back then. That's all
I say. But I remember my instructors out of PT school saying, don't go down that track. That's not really our profession. Yeah. That's a chiropractic profession. Yeah. And there was a lot of negative energy around it. And now it's mainstream, obviously, and certainly from education to literature. But interesting part for us as manual therapists is we're one of the few branches of medicine that have international standards for training and fellowship. So the Academy is part of more international cooperation with IFOMC to set the standards for training fellowships in manual therapy. So we have a nice lineage, but we also have a nice connection internationally through the literature and education to really probably deliver some of the best products for residency and fellowship training.
You want to add to that, Stefania? What do you think?
We were talking about this before the podcast about collaborative care and interdisciplinary collaborative care and how important that is to me. And I think, given my friends who are here joining the podcast, I think we can all speak to that. I think the organization, the Academy, really embraces that, as I think everyone in physical therapy should. It's interesting. We've all worked in practices that are interdisciplinary, where we've worked side by side with other people who are non-PTs as well. And I think that's one of the common features that we share. And I think that's the sign of a mature profession, is being able to work with other disciplines. And Jim, you can talk about the practice where you are now, but you have some unique disciplines there that would be different for a lot of PTs to hear about.
Yeah, where do you work? What's the setting like?
Well, what setting are you referring to?
Yeah.
The one you can discuss on air.
Yes.
Well, I would say it's not incredibly unique, other than it is a traditional outpatient orthopedic clinic, but it's designed to be a full-time residency fellowship training facility. But our circle is including physiatry, and in the Seattle area, we have a lot of interaction with other disciplines like naturopath and acupuncture and chiropractic and osteopathic. So it is fun to see the overlap and places we differ in helping patients. So, you know, we're not pounding them with the same hammer if things aren't working. We have a little bit more of a collaborative.
That's cool. That's cool. I mean, you must see that working in professional sports, too. You know, what a team will provide for their athletes, no matter what sport it is.
Yes, for better and for worse. But what's interesting is, you know, in sports, you see a lot about that team approach and that team mentality. So everybody is focused on, there's a very clear directive of getting an athlete back to play. And I don't think that should be unique. But because there's a financial incentive, it certainly happens in the world of professional sports. So you have a lot of different people working together to get the athlete back. And they're going to, whatever intervention is going to work, that's what they're going to seek out. And I feel like PT is better when we are interacting with people from other disciplines. And that includes a lot of our referral base,
right?
You know, whether that's primary care, physiatry, orthopedic surgery. I think it's important to really embrace those relationships and not be so focused on practicing independently. We're at CSM. So I'll give you an example. Yesterday, there was a talk on multi-ligament knee injuries, and it was fantastic. And a group from San Antonio that was here included Johnny Owens, who's probably known now for the blood flow restriction training, but he came from working at the CFI, the Center for the Intrepid, where they have right there on site orthopedic surgeons and physiologists, and they actually have basic science because of the research component, and they collaborate on decision-making for the patient, and it's how they've made some of the technical advances with returning wounded veterans back to the field. The example they gave yesterday in their talk was the orthopedic surgeon was explaining why he wants that communication with the PT, especially for a complex surgery like a multi-ligament knee where there might be several repairs and tissue may not be inherently good everywhere. And if he's communicating about everything he's doing, he knows the PT understands these are the reasons we have to be cautious with X, Y, and Z, and it's a constant dialogue.
And then who benefits?
Everybody.
Right. Of course.
Everybody.
I mean, ultimately, right.
Everybody benefits. I mean, obviously the patient benefits from the care, yeah. But the PT benefits because they're getting the information they need.
Right from the horse's mouth.
Right, exactly.
The guy who saw those ligaments with his own eyes.
And the doctor, the surgeon or the doctor then knows what's going on with that patient. So when the patient goes back to see the physician, he's like, yeah, you know what? I talked to your PT. I know you're doing great. This is wonderful. You know, you're progressing right on track. And so the patient gets even better.
Well, they have a sense that everybody is
on the same page.
Yes. On the same page.
And everybody knows what's going
that's
on.
That's really important when you look at a patient's response to physical therapy. You know, I posted a blog entry not long ago related to an article in the Washington Post.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So you want to sum up the article? The article was essentially it was an MD who was giving his account of his care through physical therapy from, what was it, ACL rupture?
Yeah, he had a knee replacement.
Knee replacement, that's what it was. And he was kind of saying he felt like he was getting, one-size-fits-all physical therapy.
I think that was the headline. It was actually what made me click on the article was...
Makes your stomach drop.
I saw that, and it was concerning. And, you know, so he had... Unfortunately, what was buried because of the headline was that he ultimately had a very good experience with PT. So it was more about the contrasting experiences that he had. It was all about the lack of communication, really, between the patient and the PT and the physician, the surgeon, and the PT, like all of that. And when he had the good experience, everybody was sort of dialed in and working together, and he had this very individualized care.
And you wrote a really great response to that, which I thought summed up what, I just wish that journalist had kind of, I mean, you framed it wrong, you know? We are a social society right now. We just, a lot of this flicking, I'm gonna scroll, and people see that, and it made my stomach drop.
Read the headline.
Right, so, but you wrote a really well-written and pointed response to that.
Well, it's hard because it's hard anytime you see one of your fellow professionals being critiqued, but it's not to say that at times that's not deserved.
Sure.
I mean, if your experience is poor as a patient, it's important to look at why that was the case. And I think that was the takeaway from the article is if you're PT and you see what really matters to a patient, I think it circles back to some of the things that we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Number one, that the patient's a priority. Number two, that you have a collaborative practice where everybody's invested in the patient.
And individualized care.
I think there's a perception that individualized care means longer, more expensive care, and that's what people imagine, and I don't think that's the case.
If you were to say to a patient what individualized care means, how would you explain it?
For me, when I think about individualized care, okay, so you've had a knee replacement, great, and we all know a knee replacement's a knee replacement, but that knee replacement's in a person, and that person has a job, that person has a family, that person has maybe a hobby or a sport.
A history.
Or history. Yeah, they have something beyond that knee,
sure.
Right? And they have to get back to that. So that's part of it. But then that goes even further. That person may have certain, maybe going through a divorce, or maybe they just lost their job, or, you know, there's so many other social and economic factors that play into that person and how that's going to affect how they progress with their knee.
Right.
So the knee replacement may have been done perfectly, but because of all these other factors, this person may not progress.
Life is going to affect that knee.
Exactly, yeah. And you have to take that into account. And then you also have to take into all the medical things that could potentially...
Comorbidities.
Hurt. Exactly.
Right.
I mean, there's so much that isn't accounted for when you just look at taking someone through a knee replacement rehab in what people would think the traditional sense. You've got to factor all those things in, or you're not really serving the patient as the whole.
I like that. What do you think,
Jim? And I would give a plug to the APTA's push towards a movement systems kind of concept where you're going to have two ACLs come in, same surgery, but a completely different patient in terms of did they have a movement problem prior and that's why they got injured versus is you're just coming off of what's from the surgery itself.
What caused it in the beginning.
Yeah, so our ability to assess movement doesn't exist in any other profession. Our ability to connect that to joint motion and whether it's abnormal or too much and that's our skill set that we bring to the profession. So patient comes in, and that's what we're looking at. We're not running through a protocol. We're not physician's assistant handing them a sheet of exercises that a PT drew somewhere and they're using. It's really coming in and take a look at how that person moves and where they want to go.
Because Stefania's here, I'm going to use a football cliche. I would say it allows the PT to call an audible. You know, we know we're going to pass, but now I see something over here, so I'm going to call an audible. You know, this is just a knee replacement. I've seen this before, but now I see something different, so I'm going to change your care based on you, what I see in you.
So I go a little different. I would say it's more like Stefania doing line dancing, where everybody has to do the same damn thing, and you feel comfortable, confident as a therapist, you're doing what everyone else is doing. But not everybody wants to do that dance. So some of us are freestylers and want to be out there and react to the music a little bit. And, you know, that may be a little more customized for Nancy. Yeah,
I like that.
We got to go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
Introducing EcoPro pillow covers. Good for the environment and your clinic's bottom line. EcoPro pillow covers are the clinic pillowcase replacement designed to be wiped clean just like your treatment tables. Each EcoPro pillow cover saves you 2,600 gallons of water per year, time spent laundering pillowcases, and the money involved with clinic laundry with no special cleaner required. A special deal for Pintcast listeners. When you order online at EcoProPillows.com, you'll get free shipping on any size order with the promo code Pintcast. EcoPro pillow covers, created by PTs for PTs. Considering a travel assignment over the holidays, or ready to escape the cold weather for some winter sunshine? Arias Medical Group is the leading healthcare staffing agency, offering travel and full-time career opportunities for PTs nationwide. Call Arias at 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. What have you guys seen since you've been to CSM? I know we wind up being so busy when we come to these damn things.
I know. Well, my highlight was that multi-ligament knee interdisciplinary presentation yesterday. It was one of the few things I've been able to get to because I've been tied up with a couple of talks. But Haida, I know you've been to a bunch of things.
I did. So. Actually, I just saw Jack Cook speak at the Sarasoli lecture, and that was actually really interesting because he was talking. It was more of from an academic side. But looking at how he did give a very nice lecture about how we really, the bottom line was, how do we judge what's success? And looking at PT schools and how they determine, who gets in.
Okay.
How they determine. Well, and one of the points he made was, people who take good tests, they're going to get in because they have great GRE scores. And then they're going to pass the PT board exam because they take a test.
It's a test.
And so are they really passing the boards because of things that they've encountered in school? Or because they're good test takers? And some of what they're showing is that it's because they're good test takers.
Well, then I would even go even further. Does that make them good PTs because they got great grades?
Right. Well, that's his whole point.
Yeah.
So things that they're looking at now is looking at grit, like determination, perseverance, and resiliency.
Well, the chair of my department, Sky Donovan, also refers to soft skills.
Right.
Can you have a conversation with someone?
Emotional intellect.
Right. Would you want that person to touch you physically?
They were talking about emotional intelligence on The Bachelor this week.
Were they really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere.
Who are you pulling for? Who are you pulling for on The Bachelor?
Like, I'm not rooting, but we do a podcast on it every week. It's my professional obligation.
I feel like my IQ just dropped 3 points. Maybe 30.
I try to represent all the people.
I appreciate
in my
that.
Job. So, I just wanted to point out that emotional intelligence,
it's in pop culture.
This is a word that people are hearing all over the place.
Well, it's interesting because I'm not from an academic background. I'm been a manager, clinical setting, and whenever we interview for a physical therapist, obviously the resume gets them in the door.
Sure.
But then after that, we take them out to dinner. We give them drinks. We take them out to dinner. We chat with them. We get to know them as a person. We have everyone go through a patient exam, and not so much to see are they treating the patient right, but more to see how they interact with that patient.
With a human being.
Right, exactly. How their body language, how they communicate, what their thought process is, how they get to what they decide to do, whether it's right or wrong or not. It's more the whole package of
that
person.
That's cool. What have you seen since being a CSM, Jim?
I have seen a ton of old friends, which is my favorite part.
Which is
it
what?
It really is one of the, that's like a highlight.
That's the thing,
it
yeah.
It is a highlight.
That's it. I have done...
It was seeing me, wasn't it?
That was it.
I know.
I have done zero programming.
Me neither.
I have been in one meeting after another.
That's also a big part
that's
of TSA.
Yeah, that's your job.
And then I did a little booth time at the Academy booth today, talking to a bunch of wonderful students, talking about career paths and where to go. I talked to a young woman on how to talk to her future employer to get them to pay for a residency and fellowship. And
the things
you need to do to sell yourself as a top-notch employee.
Well, can we share one or two
certainly.
Of those pointers?
Yes,
hit me.
Please.
Well, yeah, so as an employer, I'd
like to know in case I'm looking for a job.
Well, I always like to know if someone's got a passion in a career direction, you love that person coming into your business because they're going to have a positive impact as opposed to someone looking for a job to pay off their loans. But, you know, to come in and say, look, I'd love to do residency. I'd love you to pay for it. I'm willing to take a little less salary because it's, for an employer, it's less of a financial hit to pay a benefit of tuition than it is payroll and payroll tax and benefits. So,
I didn't think about that.
It's just sheer numbers to sit down with someone who thinks numbers and say, look, let's find a way to make a deal here. And it's advantageous to both groups. And then you've got an employee that is motivated to learn, to get better, to come in and make your business better. And if you can have an employee take 10 years to get up to speed, or they can do a residency or fellowship and be there in two.
Yeah.
So as an employer, I love that investment. It's the best money I spend. And so they want to take a little pay cut, and we dump that benefit down. It's an awesome way to negotiate that. And then you just have to talk about if they want to keep you there for a certain number of years after, or different ways to work that angle. But, you know, why pay for it for yourself when you can get some Yahoo buying a desk to cover it?
Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah, but my buddy of mine, John DeNoyles, did a residency, and he said, and he's a friend of mine, so he's a straight shooter. He's like, this put me at year five at year one after finishing that residency. Yeah. So he was a huge advocate of that too. So every episode that we do is a pint. But before we're done with pints, we do shots.
Oh.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum, Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at optumfellowship.com.
What's one parting shot of wisdom you'd want to leave with the audience going forward? Heidi, you can go first, since I don't know how long your voice is going to hold out.
No, I would say get involved in your profession and learn from the people around you.
Yeah.
Take part in these opportunities, because that's what this is, CSM, AOP conferences. They're opportunities to interact with people you don't normally get to on a regular basis and take advantage of that. Talk to the people.
Yeah, get involved.
Yeah.
Parting shot, Jim.
My parting shot is do not marry a classmate. Do not come out with double the tuition debt of physical therapy school and the same income. Go outside the profession, find a spouse from somewhere else.
It's ironic for several reasons that you just said that today of all days. Uh-oh. Never mind.
You just got engaged to a student.
No. We'll talk off air.
Wait a second. There's something good there. I like that. Well, mine is actually... You should have gone last. That's really hard to follow. Mine was actually tied back into Haida's. And I was going to say that it's just as important to come to these meetings as it is to do your studying and pursue advanced education because of the networking, the interaction with peers and potential mentors or prior mentors. You know, maintaining professional relationships is such an important part of, you know, extending and diversifying your career path. And I would also say it's not even just the physical therapy meetings. I'm a big fan of going to other professional meetings, especially physicians. I go to AOSSM almost every year because I deal with a lot of athletes, work in sports medicine. That is the sports medicine branch of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. So even going to the AOS meeting, which is huge, it's just an opportunity, and that's a great place. Again, you see all the socializing. We're doing this here in a bar.
Right.
Go to a physician's meeting, because that's where they are. And
taking a selfie.
Bar, taking selfies while I'm trying to have a moment of serious conversation. When you talk about collaborative care, a lot of people are fearful about venturing, especially if it's somebody who they perceive to be in a position of power. Here I am trying to actually
selfies.
Share some wisdom.
We are dropping knowledge.
But my point is... Everybody is more relaxed at these meetings, so the type of interaction that you can have is far, far different than a formal email or letter or
lecture.
Phone conversation or lecture. And I also think it's important to see what they're learning, what's important to them in their profession. What are the things that they're arguing about in terms of practice issues. And the more you understand that, the better you are able to maybe bring that back and sort of process it in relation to your clinical work. So I'm a big fan of that.
That's a cool idea. I guess I didn't think about that.
You know what's funny is I gave a talk at the California chapter a couple of years ago, and somebody came up to introduce themselves to me, and it was a physiatrist who said, I work with a lot of physical therapists, and I wanted to come to their meeting because I wanted to see what they were talking about, what was important to them, and meet other PTs who I might be referring to. And I was like, I was so impressed by that. And he was alone. He didn't have a lot of colleagues with him, but he was just going around and meeting people.
That's bold.
And it was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, because those are going to be potentially some of the best people that he can interface with in his practice as well. So I would encourage that. I hate to end on that when Rivard really had something good there with the don't marry a classmate, which I still think we need to pursue.
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, guys, hey, I appreciate it. We talked about how CSM is this giant tornado, which has little time because you got to meet so many people and do so many things. So I appreciate you guys carving out a little bit for us to pick your brains just a little bit here at Bar Rojo in San Antonio. So thank you, guys.
It's our pleasure. Thank you. You are doing a great job, by the way. Love that you're doing this for PT.
The PT Podcast. We stand for life, liberty, and beer. Plus, you know, physical therapy and stuff.
Podcasting. It's a great way to reach a huge audience. We're portable, free to download, and can be heard across the planet. Here on the PT Pinecast, we can paint a picture for your company to help spread your message to physical therapists across the world. With our show, we can put pictures into people's minds. Here, let me show you what I mean. Like if I push this button right here, I can take you back to the Jurassic era when T-Rex roamed the earth. And when I click on this,
I'm behind the wheel of a race car, driving fast and turning left. Shake it back, boys.
We paint pictures with sound and can paint a picture of your company on our show that'll leave an impression. To have us paint for you and spread your message to PTs across the world, contact us online at ptpinecast.com. Let's see what this button does. The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jimmy McKay,
with executive producer Rachel German from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee.
And CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.